The Tale of the Frozen Pussy, Slipper Trip, The Million Dollar Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will hear on Miami Memoirs. Join Florida attorney Louis Ress as he recounts his six decades of legal practice in the wilds of South Florida.
Hi everyone, I'm here with Louis Ress on Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales, and we're on episode 19, All Rise. Hi Louis, how's it going? What are we going to be chatting about today? You have a story for us?
Yeah, I do, Jeanette. This All Rise.
What's the title about?
Well, when the judge comes in to the courtroom, the bailiff jumps up and says, "Oye, oye, oye, all those having business before this court now," and he calls the court to order. Mm. And that goes all the way back to England, to the old, old English things, way, way back. And nobody even knows what oye means, but it means hear this, you know, be aware. And then the judge walks in. So they used to have these jokes. Here come the judge. Here come the judge. And then the guy comes dancing out with a gavel and in a black robe. But we human beings love formalities, and we love ceremonies and protocol. Mm-hmm. So we have robes and gowns and stripes. And we had the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court put gold stripes on his gown. And four gold stripes because he was the Chief Justice. Mm. That was Rehnquist. And they stopped that. The new Chief Justice, Roberts, is a very elegant and refined gentleman.
And humble, too. He doesn't need four stripes to
the
show.
The first thing he did is he did away with that because it was a very egocentric, presumptuous.
Yeah.
And it's a
it's
form
unnecessary.
Of... right. It's a form of saying I'm holier than you and I'm better than you.
Yeah.
And he stopped it.
That's great.
It was a very good thing for the court that he did that because it brought the court back to the elegance and the refinement and to the respect that it deserved instead of rubbing it in people's throats or
look at all this power
lauding it over them. Mm-hmm. So it was a very good move. At any rate, this is about the judge coming in. And this is a story. Again, all of my stories have a moral to them, and because they're true and it happens. This is a story, lightning striking you. You're walking along, minding your own business, and suddenly, wham, lightning comes down from out of the blue and strikes you. Your life is going wonderful, and suddenly you're really damaged. Mm. Judge Samuel Halpert was the senior workers' compensation judge in Miami. He was about 60 years old. He was short, balding, but he dressed very, very well. Okay? And his office in the Florida State Office Building on Northwest 12th Avenue, downtown Miami, was elaborate. He had a big desk in the middle of a big carpeted, sunlit room with three interview chairs and a sofa and lots of plants. It was one of these big, impressive offices with big furniture. And it was connected to his spacious courtroom. His courtroom was about double the size of the other judges who reported to him. He was the chief judge, the senior judge. There were seats for over 50 lawyers in his courtroom. And, of course, he sat on a raised platform, and he presided over everything that happened there. There was little doubt that he was a powerful man not to be trifled with.
And what made him so powerful?
What makes him so powerful is that in workers' compensation, there are no juries. And so he was the judge and the jury. Hmm. He found the facts, listened to the case, determined the facts, and then applied the law and made his ruling. So
there was no balance of power at all with the jury or anything. Yeah,
he was the jury, the judge, and the executioner all combined. I was about the last person in the world to tangle with Judge Halpert. He was always nice to me. The Aetna Casualty and Surety Company had called me, and they had referred a case to me involving a widow's benefits being claimed by the surviving wife of a metal worker who had died on the job. She was representing herself, which we call pro se.
And what does that mean, pro se?
Pro se means that you don't have an attorney and you handle the case yourself. Hmm. You file the papers yourself. There's a lot of that going on now because attorneys have become so expensive. Mm. And I'll tell you more about pro se later if you remind me.
Yes, I will.
So the claims adjuster, who the employee at the Aetna who was handling the claims, was certain that she had not filed her claim on time and that it was barred by the statute of limitations, which required filing within 2 years of the accident. The claim had been properly contested by the insurance company, by the Aetna, and they called me in. And they said, there's no merit to the claim, even though the guy died at work, and maybe as a result of an injury that he sustained at work, you have to file it within 2 years of the occurrence of the claim. And it wasn't filed on time.
I wonder why she took so long.
Well, it could be a lot of reasons. She didn't know. She was ignorant. She relied on somebody else. A lawyer told her something. A friend told her something. She didn't know how to file it, whatever.
Yeah.
And after looking at the file and reading all of the supporting documents and considering all of the possible exemptions and extensions of the statute of limitations, it seemed to me that the claim was clearly barred for failing to file on time.
Mm.
Now, maybe that's why she wasn't represented, since no lawyer would undertake the case.
Okay, as I was telling you, I finally got the Aetna to agree. I spoke to the supervisor, and then I spoke to the widow, and I asked her as many questions as I could related to the possible delay in filing the claim that would create an excuse for the late filing. And I asked all the exceptions that I can think of that would get her out of the statute of limitations, and none of them applied, and she just didn't have an explanation that was acknowledged under the law, and the claim was clearly barred. It appeared to me that it was barred. So I prepared the petition for lump sum washout settlement. Those are the settlement papers. And she signed it gladly because she was thrilled and happy to be receiving $2,000. She didn't think she was going to get anything. And she probably had been to a number of attorneys who told her she wasn't going to get a penny.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I submitted the claim to the court. And all we needed was the written approval of the settlement by Judge Halpert.
It
went in front of Judge Halpert.
Mm-hmm.
And was clear that she was getting $2,000 without any merit to her claim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that 2 weeks go by, and nothing was heard from the judge until now. It was the judge's secretary on the phone. "Mr. Ress, Judge Halpert wants to see you now, immediately, in his office. He means right now." I walk into his office.
He really wanted to see you.
I walked into his office. Well, he was angry. He said, "Ress, you can remain standing." That's not so good. I was in front of the judge in his chambers. He was glowering at me. He was really angry. He was gruff. He was mean. And he said, "Ress, who do you think you are? What do you think you're trying to get away with? $2,000 to settle a death case?" I looked at the judge and I said, "Judge, the statute of limitations has run, and sir, the case has no value. Don't tell me about the statute of limitations. I've looked at this carefully, and I've asked some other attorneys to do the same. And we all believe that there are so many exceptions to the statute of limitations that you are abusing this widow. I'm going to have you disbarred for attempting to defraud this lady and this court. Now get out of here."
Oh.
I was shaking. I was a mess. I was a wreck. My vision was blurred. My mouth was dry. My voice was hoarse. What had I gotten into? Maybe he was right, and I had not gone far enough in investigating the possible exceptions to the statute. There were many. It was impossible for me to work anymore that day, and the next day was just as bad. I continued to be unable to work. 3 sleepless nights and 3 miserable days followed. At night, I tossed and turned. I got out of bed and paced back and forth. What could it be? What did I miss? What would happen to me? I'd be disgraced. Everything I worked for would be lost. My clients, my practice, my reputation, all ruined. What could I do? I went back over everything. I read all the cases describing the exceptions to the time for filing. I read and reread the Aetna's file. Think, what could this group of attorneys have come up with? Was there anything that would extend the time for filing or excuse the late filing? I checked the date of the claim and the date it was recorded at the Workers' Compensation Commission. Nothing. I couldn't find anything.
Oh, what'd you do next then?
I was sitting in my office shaking 3 days and 3 nights. Finally, my secretary buzzed me. She said, "Mr. Rez, it's Judge Halpert's secretary on line 2. I picked up. "Mr. Rez, Judge Halpert would like you to come down to his office as soon as possible." Oh, boy. Well, I was in the judge's elaborate office very fast, quickly, and I looked up at him, and he smiled, and he said, "Lewis, sit down. I owe you an apology."
Okay.
He said, "I checked the statute of limitations out personally, backwards and forwards, and you were right. I couldn't figure out why the insurance company was paying this lady $2,000 when all they had to do was file to dismiss. So I called up the Aetna, and I learned that you had campaigned to give the widow the money and that it was coming for your attorney's fees, which you had waived. You were a gentleman, and I am so sorry to have doubted you."
Wow.
Well, the next time I appeared in Judge Halpert's courtroom, it was on a different case, and there were over 30 lawyers sitting in his courtroom waiting for him. "All rise. The Honorable Samuel Halpert, Senior Workers' Compensation Judge, strode onto the raised platform. He sat down and leaned forward and addressed the attorneys. He stated in a loud voice, 'Gentlemen, I am making this statement in open court. I apologize to Mr. Rez. Anything Mr. Rez tells me in this courtroom hereafter will be accepted by me as fact.'"
Wow, that's a big thing to say.
It is.
He was impressed by you.
What clearly. A relief. What mm-hmm. a relief. I thought that would be the end of it, but not so fast. It wasn't over. About a week later, I was walking on the street at the corner nearest the state office building where the judge's office is located, when Arnold Zalper, an older man who had authored the latest textbook on workers' compensation, came up to me. He looked me straight in the eyes and he said, "You are a liar."
Oh, my.
I was stunned. I barely knew Mr. Zalper. He actually was a quiet guy. I didn't say anything. I looked at him. I didn't say anything. I didn't know what he was talking about. Maybe he was nuts and he would become violent if I argued with him. I just stared back at him. He didn't say anything else. He just walked away. Why would somebody like Zalper turn on me? Why? What had I ever done to him? I never even had a case with him. I had no social contact with him. And it finally dawned on me. Zalper wrote the book. Who would the judge go to for an opinion on the statute of limitations? He would go to the guy who wrote the book.
Right.
Also, I knew they were close friends. He must have been terribly embarrassed to learn that I was truthful and that he was wrong.
Oh, wow.
So, this is a whole thing. This is what you call, by the way, what Zalpa did was doubling down.
Yeah, he didn't apologize or, you know.
You can see a lot of that nowadays on television with politicians. A lot of them make dishonest statements or incorrect statements, and then they double down and they say them again. And they blame everybody else but themselves.
Yeah, they don't take responsibility.
So, that's the story. And there's an underlying message, of course. So what's the underlying message? No good deed goes unpunished.
Mm-hmm.
So who said that? Well, there are two or three people that said that. It's a form of skepticism. They say, well, Claire Booth Luce, who was a famous lady senator, said that. And then they think she was the owner and editor of Time magazine.
Oh.
And then Oscar Wilde is another famous guy, crazy guy who said it. And then other people, Courtier Map said it. He was a 12th century philosopher. But it really comes from St. Thomas Aquinas, who said, "God is just. No good act goes unrewarded." That's what he said. So they twisted it around to say no good act goes unpunished.
Uh-huh.
It's a form of skepticism or cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is based on the assumption that people are motivated solely by self-interest, which today is probably a very fair comment.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. You're in your car. and you see a crime being committed. So you take out your phone camera and you record it. You record the police choking somebody or something, and the police stop you for using the camera in the car. And there's some kind of a rule or a law that says you're not allowed to use the camera while you're in a car or while you're driving.
Yeah.
And they take you.
And then you get in trouble.
Right, right. So it's a no good act goes unpunished. Mm-hmm. That's an example of it.
It's also sometimes when you're doing something good, there's going to be someone's going to be upset at you about it, either because it's affecting them or.
Right. You run out on the battlefield, and one of your buddies is shot, and he's lying there bleeding, and you bring him in, and you come, and they court-martial you for not following orders. They told you not to run out on the battlefield.
Yep.
So, and then they say, well, you were just trying to get a medal. You know, or you rescue somebody from jumping off the bridge, and everyone said, you interfered with her right to commit suicide.
There's no winning.
Yeah, well, there's a great, there's a wonderful story that within this story that I should tell you about Henrik Ibsen. Henrik Ibsen. Mm. Henrik Ibsen was
the playwright.
Norwegian. Mm-hmm. He was a Norwegian. And he wrote a play called An Enemy of the People. Mm. And the enemy of the people is the same thing. What happened was the hero of the play was a doctor who lived in a small town. It was a spa town, you know, one of these health spa baths things with the bubbly water.
Yeah.
And people were dying. And he's a doctor. So he found out, he went to the spring, and he found out that the water was contaminated with typhus. Mm-hmm. And the typhoid was spreading all over town, and everybody was dying, and all the customers, the people came for the baths and the waters were dying. And he found out that the reason for the pollution was it was seeping in from the town's sewer system.
Oh.
And so he said, you got to fix the sewer system. So they had a meeting. It was very expensive to fix the sewer system. So they blamed him for finding the problem. And he got ostracized for reporting the contaminated water. So the city was facing financial ruin. So they blamed him for it.
Well, I mean, there wouldn't be a city if everybody in it was dead, though, so.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, look, you have the same thing going on now with the COVID virus.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to shut down a business in order to save people from dying. Well, you got over 300,000 people now dead. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be more by the time people listen to this,
episode, yeah.
Yeah, podcast. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot more. Or do you close down to protect the people?
Right.
But then you damage the economy.
Yeah.
So it's very simple. You have to save lives. Your priority has to be lives over money. Or is it?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question. So always when the guy delivers the bad news, the answer is shoot the messenger.
Yeah.
And so that's the moral of the story, that good guys very often get punished. And you never know when the lightning will strike you.
Yeah.
You have the kindest thing in mind to look after the widow. And they're threatening to disbar you. And then they're jealous. And then they can't say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Lewis, I told the judge that you were wrong. But you know what? I'm convinced you were right, and I owe you an apology. He couldn't be. He had a double down. So call me a liar. So that's the, that's the story of All Rise.
Oh, it's great. Thank you. I'm sure everyone listening has encountered that at some point in their life. So thank you. Until next time.